All right, this is Enemy Combatant Radio on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM San Francisco. And this is the weekly news show that we have every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. And we use reports that we get from indie media. So, you can post audio and video and anything else to indie media. And that's a way of contributing to this show. And we also gather headlines from a variety of sources, as you can hear. And we also spoke just a few minutes earlier with Dr. Henry, what was his last name?
Dr. Henry Klessen.
And with an interesting discussion about stem cell research. So thanks to Heather for putting that together for us tonight. On Saturday morning, in negotiations at Mayor Gavin Newsom's office, the San Francisco multi-employer group agreed to end its lockout of 4,000 hotel workers. Unite Here Local 2 members will return to their jobs on Wednesday of this week. Local 2 and the hotels have agreed to a 60-day cooling-off period during which the union has agreed not to strike and the hotels have agreed not to lock them out. Negotiations will continue in an attempt to settle the outstanding issues in the contract: medical benefits, pension contributions, retiree benefits, the right to organize, wages, and the contract term. The Million Workers March Committee, San Francisco Labor Council, Unite Here Local 2, and the ILWU Local 10 held a rally and picket on Saturday at 11 a.m. at Union Square. And later, a separate community solidarity march gathered at 1:30 p.m. at Palo Market Streets to support the workers' demands for a fair contract. And we have some recordings from Saturday's solidarity protest and also from some of the Sunday night flying pickets, which have been happening in San Francisco every Sunday at 7 p.m. at Union Square. So we're going to cut over to that right now.
Do you want to tell us why you came out to the hotels on a Sunday night?
I came out to support the workers that are on strike, and they're locked out right now because they're trying to get health care and wage increases, and the owners are against that, and so we're showing our support.
And what's your name?
Sarah.
Thanks for talking with us.
No problem.
We're with you! Local 2! We're with you! Local 2! We're with you!
Tell me your name.
Antonia Cortez.
And how long have you been locked out of your work here?
Almost 7 weeks. We asked for a fair contract and our benefits, a good benefits, and they offer us 20 cents only. And they want us to pay our medical insurance.
So what is the union doing right now? Are you negotiating, or is there a standstill?
We negotiated last Friday, and we're going to be on the table next Friday.
And do you know anyone on the negotiating team?
I am.
You're on it?
Yes.
Okay, and so what is it like being on the negotiating team? How many other people are on it with you?
We are about 150 people in there.
And you meet with the managers of the hotels?
Yes. All the managers and HR with our committee.
And so you meet once a week or more often than that?
Sometimes once a week, twice a week, or sometimes after 2 weeks. But they don't offer too much.
Tell me what y'all need, what y'all really need. Contract! Tell me what you want.
Do you guys think you're going to be locked out for Thanksgiving?
It's hard to say. We don't know yet. We don't know. It depends on the negotiations and on the movements they make. So far, we don't see they moving faster, so we don't know yet.
Is it going to be hard for your family to be able to afford to celebrate the holidays?
It's going to be, of course, especially persons, families, they have small kids, little kids. So then it's going to be very hard for us to be on the street in that time, in that day, especially this Thanksgiving. I hope something good come out, but we don't know. They really don't want to negotiate with us.
Is the union going to give you guys a Thanksgiving dinner or anything like that?
Well, we don't have those plans yet, but I hope they cook something for us. Yeah. They bring some dinner over here, because if they didn't let us go back in, we're going to stay on the street.
Yeah. Okay. And what's your name?
Elvira.
How are you guys hanging in on the picket line?
We're doing our best.
Every
night, we can be here, we're here, and supporting ourselves, trying to get the jobs back.
Do you guys think you'll be back in work for Thanksgiving or for the holidays?
Well, we're hoping to be, but we'll see what happens. And if it takes a little longer to get a fair contract, we're willing to stay out, if that's what it takes.
Okay.
I feel like we deserve a fair contract after all the years we've had invested in this hotel and at working here for 20 years, that we definitely believe we deserve a fair contract.
Have you guys gone back to work yet?
She's not here.
Okay.
Yes, she's the union rep.
So are people going back to work today or tomorrow?
No, Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday.
Yeah.
So there's still a lockout through Wednesday.
That's right.
But are the picket lines ending?
The union agreed to end the picket lines as of 3 o'clock today.
As of 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so basically, there's going to be still scabs working here for
about 3 or 4 more days. Yeah. Till Tuesday.
So. When are you guys going back to work?
Well, we don't know yet. We still need to report tomorrow and to our major supervisors, and hopefully by next week, Wednesday. Yeah.
How does it feel after being out of work for 7 weeks or so?
If you're ready, yeah, we're ready to come back to work. So, yeah. Glad to be, back to work. And finally, we got the good news. So.
Yeah, he's one of our picket captain.
Okay.
So everybody did a very good job. And, we didn't win yet, but hopefully we'll go all the way.
Well, I have a question. What are the chances that during the cooling down period that you're going to work on a contract that gets the benefits that you are looking for? Does it seem like that's going to a possibility to happen?
I think so.
You're
going to be in the same old contract until you agree to
the
new one.
We keep the old contract until the new contract is signed. That's what I heard. So.
And if the new contract doesn't give you the benefits that you've been looking for, will you go back out onto the streets?
Well, we're still waiting, then see what's going on.
We're prepared.
Yeah.
We're prepared. Whatever happens, whatever the union says, we're prepared to do it again. We've done it anyway for like almost 2 months. So what? We don't have nothing to lose now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, certainly a lot of people in San Francisco are supportive.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yes.
Your effort. We'll continue to be supportive.
The community, some organization, you guys, we really appreciate what you've done. Thank you so much for all the support.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's why we're like stronger because of you guys.
We'll be back.
Thank you.
Scabs out!
Workers in! Scabs out! Workers in! We finished the lockout. We know it ended today. That does not change the fact that this is still, for the next couple of days, a scab hotel. Everybody working in this hotel, you have been a dirty, dirty scab for the past 6 weeks. The San Francisco community is ashamed of you. You've trampled on good, hardworking people. And the lockout having ended, that's not the end of the battle. You will sign the contract that Local 2 wants. And you will apologize to San Francisco for screwing it over.
Of Nigeria and Latin America,
and places all over the world where those that hold the corporate power pull down the local communities that are trying to organize for their personal health care, their rights to have a home, their rights to not have to live in the streets. And San Francisco should be leading this. And instead, we have the hotels blocking the local community organizers and the local unions that have worked to bring those rights for the workers and for the community. And that's another reason why we're out here in solidarity. And the people in San Francisco will continue to come out to confront the corporate base that holds down the community that is trying to organize for its children, for housing, and for health care. Thank you for being out here today.
That's it, Rupert.
Sign a reasonable contract and we'll be back.
Hey, more important than the union organizers, we're also out here in solidarity with the rank and file workers. They've held out for a really long time and we're out here to support them, so. Yeah.
This is Enemy Combatant Radio on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM. Actually, we're technically not on the air at this moment, but we will be soon, so we're announcing the frequency anyways. And that was some recordings from the Flying Pickets in San Francisco, I guess it was two Sundays ago, and also the community solidarity protest from this past Saturday. And in the studio here, we also have Natasha. Welcome.
Thanks.
I guess we can talk a little bit about community solidarity. I think it's something that doesn't really happen very much. So I wonder if you could just tell people what is the whole idea of community people coming out to support workers who are basically in a labor dispute, which is kind of, I mean, at least most people think of it as being, you know, a conflict resolution process that's basically between the union and the management. What does that have to do with the rest of the community? And, you know, what is this community solidarity thing all about?
Well, there's a number of reasons why I feel compelled to do it that all involve kind of answering your question. So one thing is, I think that people have really lost what the concept of solidarity is, especially young people. They don't even know what a picket line is. People are crossing the picket line just completely unaware of what's going on. Oh, there's some people yelling and I don't really care. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't even know what's going on there. I'll just keep moving and not even ask. And then there's this, you know, concept of that each union is its own unit in itself, and that workers will fight for their own rights. And this is a terrible, I think, example of the state of the labor movement in this country. That although there was a lot of solidarity among unions in San Francisco to support the Unite Here workers, and there were individuals within other unions supporting, really, I think there should have been a tremendous amount more support. I think the solidarity in a dispute like this can, like, make or break the situation. And I think if, say, the Labor Council, the San Francisco Labor Council would have, is it okay if I analyze here?
Oh, please do.
Okay. I think if the San Francisco Labor Council would have, you know, decided that this dispute was serious enough for them to get really involved, considering that it's largely over healthcare issues, and the 35,000 grocery workers in Northern California are also in the middle of a negotiation process with the grocery stores, Albertsons, Cala, Safeway, et cetera, that, you know, this is the trend throughout the nation to strip workers of their health care. And if the San Francisco Labor Council had decided this was a serious enough issue, they could have really banded together, pooled their money, given strike pay or lockout pay or solidarity pay to all the workers who bring in and do labor in these hotels, so that all the people who do the linen, clean the linens, bring in the food, you know, the Teamsters, all the cab drivers. The cab drivers were brutal in this situation, and all the airport shuttle people. If there had been some kind of effort to band together with workers, whether they're in unions or not, they could have totally made the hotels useless and completely inconvenient for people to stay in. And I think the struggle could have likely ended a lot sooner, and it's not even over. Now what's happened is there's an end to the lockout, and I think community solidarity did influence the situation a lot. I think there were a lot of people joining the picket lines. The flying pickets were out every Sunday night for 7 weeks, including last night. And so I think that's really important. There should be a lot more of it. And now they have to actually fight to get a contract that's worth something without being on the picket line. So what I think, and some other people who've been involved with the flying pickets think, is that it's worthwhile to continue doing something like a flying picket and get a little more creative, have different targets, and do some more interesting things, maybe have a theme each week for what we're going to do, so that these hotels don't think that just because they put the workers back inside that the community of San Francisco isn't paying attention.
So how did it go last night with the lockout being over and people still going out on the picket lines?
Actually, I totally shouldn't have said that, because I that was just a slip, really. We've only done it 6 weeks, because last night there were only a couple of us that showed up and a couple of us had to leave early, so nothing happened, and it was kind of depressing because I think people have this idea that the lockout's ended, so we don't need to support it, and I think we need to transform that. We need to shake that up, because, you know, there's like Matt Adams. Maybe he should be paid a visit. He's the guy who's leading up the management employers group, and he's also the VP of the Hyatt Regency. The management employer group is the group that's making decisions for those 14 hotels that have, where workers have been locked out of. So, and the whole dispute actually affects more workers than have just been locked out. It actually affects about double the number who've been locked out, about 8,000 workers in San Francisco. So I think there's more for us to do. And I think if we stopped showing solidarity now, it would be short-sighted and kind of weak.
So how are your thoughts on this influenced by your experience as an organizer for the Bike Messengers a couple of years ago? Was there community support or was there not community support back then?
Well, there was community support. It was a totally different situation. We kind of planned in secret for a month or two, and then busted out with this wildcat strike that lasted for 5 days at DMS. And we got a lot of support from other bike messengers at other companies, and people refused to take tags, you know, take jobs that they knew were coming from DMS. And the ILWU was in solidarity with us, and that's more complicated, however. And I think that it was a more isolated situation, because we were just like one bike messenger company, albeit a big one. But it wasn't something the larger community knew too much about. And by the time they could possibly get involved more in a more coherent way, our strike was over.
How much of a role does direct action play in this? And by direct action, I guess I'm kind of implying doing something that might not necessarily be legal or might not be specified in your contract or something like that, versus how much of it is just a matter of other kinds of community support, like just being out there on the picket lines or writing letters or whatever else people could do.
Well, I think it depends on the situation, but I think direct action has a lot of power, and I think it isn't used very much by the labor movement to a fault. And I think that unions at this point in time in this country really are afraid of breaking the law, and there are so many laws for them to break, because almost every labor law is something that is not in their favor. So to not break any laws is really detrimental to themselves. And I think that I'd like to see more risk-taking and Then also another way to deal with, you break the law, you have consequences, you get fines, people end up in jail. Then let's see the labor movement band together and bail people out and fight the courts. And let's see a community solidarity and union solidarity movement to defend the, you know, reasoning behind breaking these laws. And I think, you know, if you look at labor struggles around the world, you'll see that this country is the most meek that I know of, and in terms of our strike at DMS, the whole thing was based on direct action. Actually, we shut the company down by like 80-90% of its business, largely through various technical maneuverings with the radio systems and phones and other things. So that technically I wasn't legal. I don't know. I wouldn't know. But it was really what led to us winning our strike. And we weren't represented by a union. The ILWU was there and sort of involved, and that's another story. But we basically did it by ourselves. And we won a 60% raise and a bunch of other things. Not everything we wanted and not everything we should have had. But we did it through direct action, and then we didn't have a contract. We didn't fight for a contract, but we later had to keep doing slowdowns and shutdowns and things like that. So they were really effective, and I've never felt so much power in my entire life. And I wish for everyone to feel that. I like to feel it on a daily basis. So, yes, let's have more direct action.
Is that what leads you out into the streets? To support the hotel workers.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
Now, it seems like we might almost, I mean, I'm just guessing, I don't really know, but it seems like we might have potential for a simultaneous labor struggle with both grocery workers and hotel workers still having an unresolved contract within less than 60 days from now. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of the UFCW struggle. I know the negotiations have been going on for 2.5 months at this point. So there, I haven't heard really very many updates other than that they keep continuing the boycott pledge, asking people to boycott when they decide to have a boycott. So it is potentially possible that there'd be those 35,000 workers out and the 4,000, you know, 4,300 hotel workers out again. Because even with the cooling off period, it doesn't mean they won't end up out on the streets again. It'd be less likely for them to vote to strike again because they're back inside where it's warm and they're getting paychecks. But
Could the hotel workers keep working without a contract? Like if they didn't strike, would they basically be waiting for the hotels to lock them out again? Is that how it would work? I'm just not really familiar with like...
With, you mean at the end of the 2 month period?
Yeah, like basically, like could they just say, "Hey, actually, we like our contract. We'll just keep working," and then basically it would force the management to lock them out. Is that what would happen, or?
I'm not like a labor contract expert, but I don't. That doesn't sound exactly right. I think more. What would? Let me see if I can give a sense of what might happen. So 2 months is over. They haven't come together with a contract that they've settled upon. So then they, you know, they make some decisions. Oh, we'll extend the cooling off period is certainly a possibility. Or, you know, you better, there's just heavy pressure to settle and the workers could decide to vote and the companies could decide to lock them out. But they're really kind of working without a contract at this point. And, you know, the health care is being paid by these deals that have, because it's supposed to expire on December 1st for all the workers, but it's the health care payments have been extended. So I don't think they can just accept their old contract or anything. Right. And that, I don't think they would after being on the street for almost 2 months.
So, I mean, how can we tie together the issue of healthcare for just a relatively small number of workers and make it something that could really actually convince tens of thousands of people to come out and support that. I mean, I think there have been a couple of protests about healthcare recently, but I don't think they've really been what I would call mass protests. Is there some kind of strategy? Is it a media strategy? Is it, what kind of strategy do labor activists need to really like get this message out to people?
Well, I guess there's a problem in that most people get their health care in this country from their employment. And that's messed up. And that came to be through negotiations that unions and bosses made back in the day. But in order to get universal health care, we need to take it out of the hands of the bosses that we're working for. Healthcare needs to come from a public source, not from our employers. So, and yet, in order to mobilize people to support these workers, the way I think of it is, anytime the bosses are winning and stripping workers of anything, it's a loss for everybody. You know, even if we want to totally reinvent the system of healthcare and reinvent the entire system as a whole, it's not. It doesn't benefit any of us for these workers to end up without health care and in the emergency room and without any preventative care. I mean, it's more expensive and all those arguments, but it's just anytime the bosses win, it just encourages them more. And we keep taking hit after hit, and we just need to stop it every chance we get.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems to be an issue that they are talking about in Sacramento, but it's like they just have repeated proposals. I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger's latest proposal was to have the state of California actually fund a healthcare plan for people who couldn't afford it. Is that something that working people are going to be supporting? I don't know if you're familiar with the details of that.
Yeah, I just heard briefly about it. I don't really know the details. Of course, I'm suspicious because it comes from our next president. I mean, yeah, I don't know so much about that. I think it's something that has to be done on a national level. I don't see how it could be done on a statewide level exactly. But that's what Prop 72 was all about, and it failed.
Yeah, well, that was to have the employers pay for it. And this would basically subsidize the employers by having the state. Basically, it would mean like Walmart would be subsidized because the state would pay for health care for its low-income workers.
Oh, that sounds like a bad plan.
So, but maybe it's better than nothing at all. I don't know. It kind of depends, you know, how how bad of a deal are you willing to accept, I guess. But, I guess part of the problem with the whole community solidarity idea is that it's not organized by, well, maybe this isn't a problem, but could be a problem. It's not really organized by established groups or, you know, how do people get involved with it as a concept? I mean, it seems from my experience, you can't go to the Central Labor Council. You can't even speak if you're not a delegate. You know, there's no way for community supporters to actually get involved in doing community support for unions except through the unions. Is there any way for people to like plug into something that exists, or maybe is this a need, like we need to set up some kind of network for people to work on that idea? What do you think?
Well, I think there's a need for an organization or groups of people working on this on an ongoing basis to support workers that are in unions, but also to support the vast majority of workers that are not in unions and workers who want to organize. You know, some kind of resource center or some kind of network that people can plug into to get help to figure out how to organize themselves and learn about successful ways of doing that and unsuccessful ones. And as far as you know, supporting workers who are in a union but being outside the union, yeah, it's freaking complicated. And because like we've found at the Flying Picket, I mean, that's one way to plug in is we're gonna keep up, you know, posting things on IndieBay and letting people know and wanting to hear what people have for ideas in order to figure out creative ideas for helping the hotel situation end and in the best way it can. But Yeah, the union, like, we go to the picket lines and there's the tape on the tape on the ground. You can't cross this tape, and that means that none of the doorways are actually blocked by picketers. It's just you don't even have to cross through the picket line. You just walk around the picket line. And that's frustrating. A lot of people have complained about that. And the union, you know, has its strategy and its reasons that it gives for doing that. And it's really trying to, because the laws are so heavily weighed against them, they don't want to get an injunction by having problems like they have in the past and getting bullhorns taken away and some judge limiting how many people can be on their picket lines. So we end up, you know, respecting the picket captains when they tell us to not cross in front of the door. But then really what we found was that most of the time the picket captains were fine with us pushing the limits. And they saw that we were a distinct group from the workers and could deal with it as such whenever if the situation arose where there was some crackdown or some request for this to stop. So, you know, the picket lines where we were asked to stop and sit in the tape, then we did, and the ones where the picket captains just kind of went around the corner or dropped their eyes or whatever, we just got to push the limits. So it's kind of, I think there's a lot of work to be done, actually, and I think a lot of thinking can be done about how to support workers who are already in unions with their own strategies. But I think that if the union movement thinks they can win without community solidarity, they're wrong, and they're also not looking at the history of the last at least 30 years.
Okay, one last question. Our fabulous mayor, Gavin, has kind of positioned himself as this backroom broker of deals between big business and the big labor, as you might call it, with this most recent thing on Saturday morning with a kind of last-minute cooling-off period. He's kind of repeatedly said that he's not taking sides in this and that he just wants whatever's good for business in San Francisco. Now, where is he going to cross a line where, what's good for business might not be so good for the city of San Francisco? It seems like he's kind of trying to maintain political support in different areas, like whether through gay marriage or through the through labor unions or whatever. Is this something that people are kind of keeping an eye on? Like, I've been kind of surprised at how much the labor unions have been willing to work with such an establishment, big business kind of politician. And it seems like they're almost setting themselves up to be sold out by this guy who I think most progressive people don't really trust. What do you think about Gavin Newsom?
Well, I think exactly what you just said about is exactly what happened with Willie Brown. I mean, unions totally supported Willie Brown, gave him money, gave him votes, and what did he ever do for working people? And just like they gave, I don't know, $50 to $100 million to the Kerry campaign, and what's going to come of that? That's people's money. That's workers' money going toward that instead of building strike funds and building support for themselves. It's ridiculous. And they really live by a strategy that I've heard people within big known unions come out and say, just like in arguments when you say, well, why are you going to invite Willie Brown to this event? It's pointless. He doesn't care. Well, you know, you scratch his back, he'll scratch yours. And that's really the policy that they live by. And it's not always true. And even if it is, it's not an even scratch. So, I don't see the point of putting your faith in any one politician or any group of politicians anyway. That's not where the power is. The power is in the people in San Francisco. The power is in the workers and developing their leadership and education about how much power they actually have.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Natasha, for being here.
Thank you.
On Enemy Combatant Radio. And I guess people can check Indie Bay for updates on flying pickets and community solidarity and all that, and maybe there will be a video appearing there soon. So, all right. So I guess we should wrap up the show pretty soon, but we'll be back in a moment. Thanks for listening.